Welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast with me, Ryan Dalton. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let's tell you a little bit about what this podcast is and why it's here. So this podcast is all about wildlife, animals, and pretty much everything that is on this planet Earth. This idea came to me last year when I did my first ever solo show called Into the Wild, and it was a show, again, about my love for animals, my love for wildlife, where that came from, what kind of person it shaped me into. And after the show, I was talking to quite a few people in the audience, and they would come up to me and go, "Oh, Ryan, just, you know, another success. What a fantastic, enjoyable 45 and a half minutes that was. When will you stop amazing us with your comedic talent?" I'm like, guys, enough. Let's focus on the animals, please. I mean, thank you for the flowers and the chocolates. But a lot of them did say to me that they share that kind of passion for wildlife, but don't always know the forums to go and find out about up-to-date news, information about different species. So a light bulb went off in my head about, how about create that forum? Why not make the show that I did into a podcast? So that's what I've done. This is what you're listening to now. This is what we're recording that's going into your ears. So what I've done is I've recorded numerous episodes. Each episode is about an hour long and has one comedian on it and an animal expert. And we talk about three different species of animals. And we just have a chat. And it's kind of where factual information, just discussions about the animals, whether it's to do with fears or phobias or stuff like that. It's good fun. This episode is titled Tigers, Tarantulas and Tilikum. I'm sure you're all aware what a tiger and a tarantula is. Not all of you might be aware what a tilikum is or who tilikum is. Tilikum was a male orca at SeaWorld. And the reason why I've included him in this is because he was the kind of the story, the inspiration behind the documentary Blackfish. And at the time of recording this episode, back on January, that's embarrassing, back in January, he recently passed away 6 days prior to recording. So at the time, it was topical, it was hot, it was on Twitter, it was in the media. Now in April, there's other things going on, but the information that we discuss on here to do with blackfish, to do with orcas and those kind of animals being kept in captivity is still current, still correct, and still very important really to discuss. I've got two other guests with me on the show. Like I said, I have a comedian and I have an animal expert. I won't introduce them now. They'll be introduced as the episode begins. And apart from that, the only thing I want to ask for is, please bear with me. This is my first ever recording. I really hope the more I do this, that my presentation skills and my ability to be able to edit a podcast successfully really does evolve and grows, because it was a challenging first attempt. Recording it was easy. It was great fun. Editing it and having that kind of confidence behind the whole thing really, I don't know, it was a great learning curve for me, I guess. So please have that patience, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So here it is. Thank you. I am joined here by two guests who are eagerly awaiting to talk about animals. So thank you both for coming on. First of all, let me introduce you. So I've got Simon Lynn. Simon, thank you very much for joining me on today's episode. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit and tell people a bit about what you do or your
why you're on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have worked with animals of all shapes and sizes for most of my career. I'm currently working with cats and dogs in a big rescue in the southwest, but I previously worked in zoos. I worked at Chessington Zoo and London Zoo, a number of the big zoos, and also had a stint working on a farm.
So, amazing. Yeah. Cool. So you work with like quite a range of species.
Pretty much, yeah.
Favourite?
I love the rhinos. Rhinos, yeah, they're pretty good.
Cool. And I'm also joined by stand-up comedian Beck Hill.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us on today's episode. Are you excited to talk about different animals?
I am, yeah. Most of the animals I'm used to are the drunk ones on Saturday night, so looking forward to the more lovable ones.
I'm going to introduce this, and I'm sorry if this is a cringy moment, but I was Googling you guys as well because I wanted to find out a bit about you. But of course, Beck, I found out you won an award, which is probably my most favourite award.
I know which one you're going to say.
Any award I've ever seen. And that was the Golden Lucy Award for Nation's Favourite Toilet Joke.
Yep.
Didn't you buy WaterAid?
Yes.
Which is just like the best award.
Yeah.
You thought, right, I can quit now. That's it.
I think it was like the first award that I've won that's like, and I was going to say proper award. I know it sounds like a not proper award, but it was in newspapers.
It's
so
in the paper.
And I do have the toilet seat that they gave it to me. Yeah.
Is it an actual toilet seat?
It's an actual toilet seat, but I can't connect it to my toilet because it's got a different connection. Like it's got different, so it's just sitting in my lounge. And people come around, they're like, why have you got a toilet seat in your lounge?
Yeah,
well open it up and then there's a little plaque on it.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That is amazing. Can we ask for the joke?
Yeah, the joke was, I was given Sudoku toilet paper for Christmas. It's terrible. You can only fill it in with number ones and number twos.
There you go. Now that's the standard we've hit.
Yeah. So strap in, guys. For some more intelligent stuff.
You're pretty good with puns, though, as well, right?
I like some wordplay, yeah.
So no pressure today if you feel like out there for tigers.
Try not to
or anything,
punish
go for
you.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Please don't turn off. Please don't.
They're like, no, I'm not here for puns. Right. we're going to be talking about two species and a particular animal today. First of all, we're going to start with, I won't actually say. What I'm going to say is 2016 was a challenging year for many different reasons, whether it be politically, socially, or emotionally. For some people, it was a bit of a challenge, and it was hard to kind of try and find that good. That kind of, you were kind of like digging, going, "There's got to be some good news somewhere." But there was, and it was quite easy to find, to be honest. So, because in 2016, a global census was released for an animal, showing that for the first time, its numbers in the wild increased. Do you know what animal?
Tiger.
The tiger. Yeah.
I mean, it's in the title, isn't it?
Freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the idea of them doing a census on tigers. And what do you do for a living? I'm a tiger.
Cool, okay. Fantastic. That's another one, guys.
Any vegans in the household? No. Okay. Yeah.
But it was for the first time the numbers increased, which was amazing. Do you know how long it had been since the animals' numbers had increased?
No.
I don't know.
No. It's fine. It was in 100 years for the first time.
Good.
Since the turn of the 20th century, it hadn't happened. Depressingly, it wasn't even by that much. It was by just under 700 individuals. But when you look at the actual animal itself, census came out, there was about 3,890 individuals, risen from about 3,200 in 2010. So it's the first time they've gone up. Which is huge, I think. Are we a fan of the tiger?
I think that's a fantastic start.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
It's like gone up in the right places, right? It's not like they've popped up in like libraries and they're killing the children or something.
You're walking down London, you can't move from now.
Yeah. In London, actually, you're never more than 6 feet away from a tiger.
It's crazy. No, but it is bizarre you say that, actually, because they're actually a weird thing. Quite a well-known fact, there's actually more tigers in captivity in the US alone than there are in the wild total.
Oof.
So it's kind of, when you start looking at that there may be, you could say a good bunch of them in the UK rather than in wild in some countries in their natural habitat.
Yeah.
So if you look at there's probably more tigers in captivity in UK than there are in Vietnam and Thailand in the wild, for example. Because there's only, I think I looked briefly, and I think there was less than five in Vietnam left. So that's kind of, and that's a country that they once roamed.
Yeah.
A frightening thing I read somewhere was that it's easier to buy a tiger in the States than it is to buy a dog in some areas.
Really?
You know, wow. You can buy them just black market, or there's no legislation there. It's crazy, isn't it,
the way this happens? And it's, I mean, some, I'll say that, and we talk about captivity, but it, you know, that doesn't mean they're all pets. You know, they are probably involved in some sort of breeding program and conservational reason, but it is. Or magicians. Yeah. You know, they're working for us. It's amazing.
There's a tiger in my cafe. That's a good children's book waiting to happen. Yeah. Well, there's a tiger who came to tea, so I'm really close to that. I'm plagiarising already. I'm sorry.
You're only 5 minutes in, but you're already. But tigers, for me, have kind of always fascinated me. I don't know what it is about them as a cat, whether it's because they're the biggest or whether they're unique patterns. Have you guys ever got close to a tiger before? Simon, have you worked with them?
I've not worked directly with them. I've certainly worked in zoos where they are around. And they're incredible, and they are that much bigger than every other sort of big cat.
Yeah.
Which is kind of intimidating when you do get up close to them.
Yeah, I've always just had a love for them, and I think it is a size, and I think this is going to sound so weird, but their eyes as well, they've got really capturing eyes when you kind of look at them, and even if they're a bit aggressive, they stare you out.
Yes.
They kind of just watch you, and they go down low, and it's just, I don't know, I've got that love for animals that kind of could kill me. I've always had that kind of respect for you. You know, same with sharks and animals like that. It's like, I love them because they could kill me.
Yeah.
But do you know what animal they're closely, what big cat they're closely related to out of all of them? So,
I think I do know this. Is it a snow leopard?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Point for that. No, it is, because there was an analysis done. A lot of people think kind of lion or jaguar or something like that they're closely related to. Mm. But it is, if you go back, their species about 2.8 million years ago. They're closely related to each other more than the lion, the leopard and the jaguar. I mean, we all know tigers are, spoke about the numbers, so we know they're critically endangered now as a species as a whole. And there were 10 originally recognised tiger subspecies. One went extinct in the prehistoric times. And there's been 3 more extinct since. And there's 6 remaining.
Was the prehistoric one the saber-toothed tiger?
No, it wasn't. It was because I thought that. I was a bit ignorant on this. I was looking up going, surely I'm going to see saber-tooth or something like that. But the name of it was the Trinil. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Not clear.
If I'm not, please tweet or comment and have a go at me. I'm sure that's going to happen at some point. But it became extinct in the prehistoric times. And then there were 3 more. So there was a Bali tiger. The last individual of them was, this is so depressing, was shot in 1937. The last one. One more. And you're like, well, shoot it. Which was a female. Although there were some reports that there were some corpses of that tiger found in 1960, so it was unsure if that was the last one, but it's certainly the last sighting of one was in 1937.
And the last shooting.
And the last shooting. The Caspian tiger, last sighting in 1970s, and the Javan tiger, there was no more sightings of that one from 1979. Footprints have been seen in areas, but it's hard to tell whether that belongs to that species or what. But
and is it mainly hunting that's making them go extinct?
Yeah,
extinct, or is it environmental things as well?
It's kind of a mixture of both. Simon, do you want to?
Yeah, I think obviously there's a big black market trade out there for various parts of the tiger, and I think there's the habitats sort of as they evaporate. There's no corridors between them. I think, you know, we create corridors for hedgehogs and all sorts of wildlife, but you know, you might have a group of tigers in one forest, and there's a forest, you know, a couple of miles down the road, but if they can't get between the two, then they're not increasing the gene pool.
So they need a tunnel that goes over the road,
pretty much.
That, strangely enough, happens with some animals, especially a lot of arboreal animals. Yeah. They now create above ground.
Yeah, they have little crossings
and stuff like that, because you can't destroy what you've built now. You have to kind of increase.
How many tigers hit by cars? Is that a common?
Well, there are roads, but not.
Yeah, I mean,
like the M25. No.
Oh, I'm in a tiger again.
Yeah, watch out, they're jumping across.
There's certainly issues with if a tiger attacks livestock in a village somewhere, farmers will go out. So I imagine there probably is roadkill, as well. Yeah.
I mean, one of the species that went extinct, it was, just to go down again to remind myself of the name, I'm pretty sure it was the Caspian tiger, was purposely killed because of the amount of times it was attacking people and the amount of times it was attacking livestock. So it was kind of purposely driven to extinction.
It's depressing.
Yeah, that is, isn't it? That we have that power.
Yeah.
People on this planet have that power. But there was definitely, I might confirm that later, but there was definitely one species that was heavily taken to extinction because that was the intention. But yeah, it's a mixture of kind of environmental stuff. So, you know, rainforest or habitat destruction, whether that be for livestock, whether that be for timber or you know, anything that we've planted instead of, like palm oil could be one to get different oils as well. Hunting, medicine markets, and stuff like that. There's loads of horrible things when you start looking it up. But no pressure. Can you guys name the remaining six species?
Bengal.
Bengal, yes.
Yes! Yes!
Go right. To, yeah. So happy, like, well, right. Oh,
good
right.
Luck, Si. There's only five.
It's like the Golden Lucy moment again. yeah, Bengal tiger, the most populated one as well. So there's the most species of that. Any?
Yeah, there's the Amur tiger, which I think is the same as the Siberian tiger.
Yeah, so Siberian Amur tiger, yeah, which is the...
I have no idea. Yeah,
it's
no.
The largest.
Okay.
Largest, right. Yeah, so stands out as one of the largest species. Yeah. Sorry if I put you guys on the spot.
No, I like this. I like a challenge. Like, there's also the cartoon one that you get on cereal boxes. Mm-hmm. That's really... it's actually the most common.
One. Yeah, that's the most common one, yeah. That one you can find in supermarkets.
Yeah. Sumatran tiger.
Only found on the island of Sumatra now. So that, like we were saying about habitats and areas, that was one that's kind of facing the biggest challenge.
Mm.
Bread.
I want to say there's one...
Tiger bread.
Yeah.
It's just coming up with words with the word tiger bread.
There's one that's Indochina or something, or Indochina.
Yeah, that is. So the Indochinese tiger, also known as the Corbett's tiger as well. That's the most common name. There's also one called the South China tiger, which is now no longer found in the wild. So there's only 65 individuals left in captivity or in nature reserves kind of thing. It's not been seen for about 25 years. And then, is that one of them? Oh, no, there's one of them. Malayan tiger as well.
Of course.
Of course. How can we forget the Malayan tiger? So those are the six remaining species. And they come, like, tigers are kind of unique because they have the biggest range in sizes when it comes to the big cats. So lions are kind of the two main species, you've got the Asiatic and the African lion, but they still range in sizes a little bit in areas. But tigers are the most diverse in size, and that's mainly because of their diet. With different areas they live in, some hunt wild deer, wild boar, others are hunting kind of macaques or something like that, which is, you know, keeping them a bit smaller. And also due to hunting as well, different animals have been hunted because they were bigger and it's like dwarfed their size a little bit. The largest tiger reported had a length, I was quite surprised by this, of 11.1 foot. Yeah. And I'm guessing that'd be from head to the end of the tail, which is huge.
Yeah,
which I'm is trying to. About,
that's nearly the width of this room, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Nearly. I mean, I'm 6'7". If I laid down, I'd definitely be half the width of this. So
that's a.
It's huge. It also weighed just shy of a ton. So just under 900 pounds, which was huge. I'm guessing that would be the Siberian. It didn't actually say which one it was. I tried to do a bit of research, but I couldn't find it.
You could ride that one though. That's whenever I hear of a big animal, I'm like, I could ride that.
Yeah, you would get permission first before riding in that tiger.
You should definitely consent is wanted from that tiger before I got anywhere near it. But this is going to be a random question for you. I don't know why I've worded it like this, but I thought it's kind of a clue in the title. What does Alistair McGowan and Siberian tigers have in common? I know. What a question, right? What a question.
I do not have a clue.
You said,
go with it. I can see you.
So
really.
Is it because you said the word common?
No. So you guys know Alistair McGowan? If you don't, then
is it a politics person?
No,
he's a impressionist, is he?
Yes.
I don't know. He's very good at doing an impression of tigers.
Impersonate other
creatures' sounds or something?
Exactly, yeah. Siberian tigers have been seen doing it quite a bit for black bears. So they attract them for prey. So they will do the noise of a black bear. Quite realistically, there was a few YouTube videos of them doing it in the wild. And also imitating in captivity, they imitate different noise, Siberian tigers, and they imitate a black bear. Black bear will approach, and then they will pounce and try and
that's,
kill it.
Wow. That's a big Again. Prey to bait,
well,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Well, yeah.
If I could do a black bear call, I probably wouldn't.
I probably keep that quite on the low, especially in the environment where black bears are active. But I didn't know that... at all, really, and the fact that they're able to do that to attract their prey, I mean, they can probably do it with other animals, I couldn't see, but black bears was the one that the behaviour's been seen most out there as well. And we spoke quickly kind of at the beginning about tiger numbers, but I didn't specify that at the beginning of the 21st century there were about 100,000 when I did the kind of census then. I guess, again, this is all approximate. This is no like there are exactly 100,000 there and now only 3,000. These are all approximates. But there was about 100,000 tigers left. So that drop going down to what we were talking about is quite significant. I think that's quite scary when you look at
and
it.
And I think that almost mirrors rainforest, doesn't it? It's the tiger, the territories they're in, it's something like 6% left in that same time. So
exactly.
Kind of
and
kind of mirroring
it. It's just kind of 100 years, when you look at it from an evolutionary point, it's not, you know, it's a blink. So to look at a species that's trying to survive that kind of individual number drop in the wild, that's just crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, the numbers are only just increasing now. And the main reason for their struggle is habitat destruction, fragmentation, poaching as trophies, and in traditional Chinese medicines as well. But what, I mean, Simon, have you got any advice for people? Like, because, I mean, a lot of people love tigers, will absolutely love them and go, like, well, I want to try and do my bit. Is there anything we could, because we're not in that area, so there's nothing environmentally.
I mean, there are big charities and conservation charities out there doing really good work with them. I think WWF are a good example. The ZSL are doing really good stuff with tigers. I think it's just supporting them. You know, it goes without saying not to be buying... you know, traditional Chinese medicine.
Damn it! You had me until then. Yeah.
But, you know, that is it. And I think, you know, also supporting those zoos and those organisations that are actually putting something back into conservation, probably. So ZSL, London Zoo is a good example, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had this conversation with people quite a lot recently about breeding programmes. It's quite easy for people to go to a zoo and go like, yeah, we're helping tigers due to a breeding program. And people will hear that. And I think it sometimes goes straight over their head. Yeah. Like, what does that do? Like, what does a breeding program do? So are you able to shed a little bit of insight for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, I know people have mixed opinions about zoos, but there's a lot of zoos that are, you know, actively working with organisations that are looking to certainly keep the gene pool alive and fresh. And actually some zoos that are, you know, working to, in some cases, reintroduce animals back into the wild. I don't know whether that's the case with tigers, possibly not. But, you know, certainly, you know, it's really important that we don't just end up with a small group of tigers that ultimately become inbred you know, die out. So it's keeping a really active gene pool from lots of different lines and you know, working with those charities that perhaps are doing that
and
work.
Helping them as well, yeah. Because there were some examples of tigers being released or trying to be released back into the wild, but like you said, because the environment they're living in isn't fixed yet, it's kind of a waste of time. You're basically giving it over to the poacher, almost kind of thing. Going, here's your brand new raised tiger to come and kill.
So they've got to work on that as
well. They've got to fix that kind of first before you start doing it. And also, it's I laugh as I said that. This isn't funny. One tiger was released into the wild, and then it's not known if it was this tiger. But shortly after that, in their area, there are a lot of people and cattle being killed. So it's kind of like, that's not going to get the public on side, is it? Like, all you need to do is look, boom, and then suddenly, well, now my farm's gone. Yeah. So it's like, you've got to win those.
What you do is give the remaining tigers guns.
Yeah. Do it for me.
Breeding programs in zoos, that's kind of like Tinder for tigers, isn't it? Like, that's like if you were a single and looking tiger, that's like that's what you want to get into, isn't it?
Get yourself on Zinder.
Swingers club.
Have you guys been to any zoos with tigers in, or seen any breeding programs before/recently?
I've been to many zoos.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say
some fantastic, some truly awful, and you know, much, you know, like zoos
in
general.
Can you name the awful ones?
Well, I've been to some zoos in Russia, which was far from ideal.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, pretty bad. But, you know, likewise, having worked in zoos, you and I both know some very passionate people that work with big cats and hugely knowledgeable and are actually, you know, help, you know, they are helping the cause.
They are, yeah, absolutely. What they're doing, they are. And it's kind of hard to see that from public sometimes. When you go into a zoo, you go, well, yeah, I can see this.
Yeah.
But you don't see, like you were saying, Beck, going behind the scenes almost and kind of seeing what the enrichment goes on and what the other work for national wildlife rather than just also exotic species, doing a lot for kind of like dormice and different beetle species. That happens in zoos all the time. But I think that's forgotten quite a lot. If we're talking about tigers, we have to discuss white tigers.
Yeah.
Like Siegfried and Thingo, didn't they have one in their act?
Yeah, they're popular because they're different.
Yeah.
But there's a huge misconception with them that people believe they're a species of tiger.
They're just albinos or something.
It's a pigment malfunction, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, ultimately. It's
not quite out like albino, but it's that.
They're the gingers. I didn't say it was a negative thing.
It's like
some people think that your kind is very special, maybe its own species.
That's pretty. I can't believe how quick I took offense to the word ginger. You went ginger, and I'm like, whoa. All right, it's not like albino. It's just they haven't got that coloration in them, basically.
Exactly, and it's a good example, perhaps, where. It's not the most responsible breeding where they are in zoos. Sadly, they are often in the zoos that are looking for the quick money, buck and to bring people in because they are cute and fluffy and people love to see something a bit different. But as far as trying to further conservation, they're probably not a necessary part of it.
Yeah, when I was doing a bit of research, I would put in tigers and. If I came across a website that was just using white tigers as images or going they struggle to survive in the wild, you know, their conservation is important, just get off that website straight away because you're going to have to question a lot of other facts if you start seeing that kind of information.
I never knew that, but I'm going to be so judgmental now.
I know, but this
especially when you see people with those velvet wall hangings of like, you know, when it's like a pastel glittery picture of a white tiger.
The difficult thing is people don't like to admit something maybe that they've been supporting or loving is in fact doing damage. And that's the reason why people get quite defensive about it. I've seen a lot of people, when I was doing a lot of guest speaking at Chessington Zoo, one thing me and my team were trying to push is the stopping the misconception with white tigers. But we got quite a negative response from it. And we were like, look, we're not saying you've done anything wrong. Just stop supporting it. Because it's just inbreeding. To get white tigers now, it's got to that point.
Yeah.
And they don't survive in the wild, not because they're poached, it's because they can't hunt, because they're white. because prey's going to spot them like they would spot a polar bear in the forest as well. They're not going to stand out. So that's kind of a message, I guess, on this podcast is, boo white tigers? I don't know. Boo white tigers. Just maybe do a bit of research on it and you might find a bit more. So that's our tiger chat, but... I know it's quite brief, but we're just talking about the species in general.
I liked it.
You liked it?
I learned some stuff. I'm going to yell at people who like white tigers now.
Yeah.
I feel enlightened.
I go, no, guys, look it up.
Yeah. Just because they're white doesn't make them more important.
It's not the rest of the world. I've got to look outside the box. Okay, so that's tigers done. We're now going to move on to an animal group that most of us would probably freeze at the sight of. It's a lot smaller, a lot less dangerous than the previous animal, but that animal is a group of spider called the tarantula.
Hooray.
Now, guys, how do we feel about tarantulas?
Did you say they're more dangerous than tigers?
Less dangerous.
Less dangerous,
yeah, a lot less dangerous.
Yeah, because they're not poisonous, are they?
They're not actually. Well, that is one of my questions. I'm going to scroll down because that's one of my questions.
Oh, we can wait till then if you want.
Should we wait till?
Let's wait till then.
We'll go on to that. But how do you guys feel about tarantulas from a point of there's one in front of you, what would you do?
Not great. I'm not going to lie.
You're not great.
I appreciate them.
I like what they do.
Yeah, they are part of the natural world, and I love that. But wouldn't want to be necessarily in close proximity to one.
No, and
strangely, this is. I think a lot of zookeepers and animal people share that fear.
I do. Yeah, it's kind of embedded in people. In a very similar reason that sharks is as well. It's kind of been put in the film and in. Everything creepy has spiders around it, and so tarantulas are just a big spider.
Well, don't they say that we're naturally more adverse to anything with more or less than more or less than four limbs, and if it's two limbs, we can be a bit funny about it, but we're a little. So oh, it's really? Like because we have four limbs.
Yeah.
So apparently we identify more with other animals with four limbs.
Yeah, well that kind of makes sense.
Birds, we're kind of a bit like we can be a bit funny about.
Yeah.
Like most people are alright with birds, but you probably get more people freaking out about birds than you do like cats or dogs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then things with more than four legs or less than two is when most people are like, no, because you can't relate to it. You don't know how it moves. You don't know. Yeah.
I don't know how quick it can move. I don't know. But, and I said to you guys before we started recording, I've done so much research on tarantulas that I've kind of found this new love for them. Because
I think I've never held one, but I think if a professional was like, or if I was with someone who owned them for ages and they went, would you like to hold one? I'd say yes. But yeah. I think if I walked in here and you went, Beck, and I turned around and there was one on my shoulder,
that would freak me out as well.
Yeah. I mean, but then I get that about like, you know, anything really. If there was like an apple on my shoulder, I'd be like, when did that happen?
I've
got four legs.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, if I saw a tarantula or even a big spider, just like a house spider in the UK, I would crap my pants. I'm not scared of them, but right. Like you said, I've got that awareness that I don't know what that individual can do because I didn't know that much about them.
It's completely irrational, and you know I know this, and but you just can't get over it. It's kind of inbuilt. It's a caveman thing, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, they're huge, they're hairy, and they've just got that look of a danger and an unknown about them. Yeah. So I think that's why people have that fear as well.
They don't seem to. I mean, they're probably capable of it, but I never see a tarantula running really fast. No, in the same way that I've seen other spiders go fast.
Yeah, they are.
And so for me, the slow, it's like zombies. Yeah, I can hack the slow zombies, like anything Dawn of the
World
Dead,
War
I'm
Z,
fine.
Yeah, yeah, but, War Z zombies,
yeah,
no.
28
but,
days later, nah,
no,
nah.
No, but The Walking Dead zombies, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's
fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And if there's a professional with one of the Walking Dead zombies right here, they're like, do you want to hold it? I'd be like, okay.
The one just appeared on my shoulder. As a guess, do you know how many species of tarantula there are? Individual species?
I'm going to guess quite a lot.
There are a shocking amount, yeah.
900?
No way.
No, I'm just...
No, is that your guess? There are approximately 900 species.
What? I mean...
Good guess.
Like, that is... Well done.
I mean, I was just going back to the weight thing, but...
It works, there's a theme. Approximately 900 species, which is loads, and they all kind of live south of the equator. Mm. They kind of a few north, kind of just kind of in. There's a few big spiders like Spain and places like that, but they're most tropic and subtropic animals. The biggest, because that's when it comes to spiders and dangerous animals, we love to talk about the biggest that's ever been recorded. Was a individual Goliath bird-eating spider. Its body got up to 4.5 inches. Its leg span was 11.5 inches. Now,
that's big enough
I've
to ride.
I've just realised what I'm about to do is pointless on a podcast because it's a visual thing. I'm like, what are you doing? Guys, grab a dinner plate and have a look because most dinner plates, so this dinner plate I've got here is actually, I know, it's so pointless, I can't see it. I'll put up a picture of it with my hand. So you can have a look.
You've got quite large hands though.
I have.
Do it with my hand.
Okay,
it'll be more impressive.
We'll get that picture afterwards.
Yeah.
It'll be a picture of Beck's hand on this dinner plate. This dinner plate is smaller than 11.5.
No, sorry,
it's bigger. Sorry,
well,
it's
think
bigger.
About a 12-inch pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Okay,
yeah.
When you order a 12-inch pizza.
Imagine opening up the box.
So, 11.5.
And there's a tarantula.
God, can you imagine?
So, you'd get it for free, though.
I think so. It'd be only fair.
If you just called up Domino's and you're like, there's a tarantula.
And it was more than 30 minute wait.
Yes, that's a 10 inch.
Yeah, so this is a 10 inch plate. That is huge.
I'm just glad that I now know why there was a plate with a tape measure on it.
Yeah, I know. I thought, should I hide the plate or should I leave it on view?
That was the weirdest thing in this room. I'm next to a fruit bowl that has paracetamol, lemons and some penguin bars.
Beck, what do you put in your fruit? That's a question for the end. We'll do a football question. But that is, I mean, that is huge. It weighed up to about 175 grams, which again doesn't, I mean, they're very light animals, even when they are big, but that's quite heavy for a tarantula. I mean, that's, like I said, that's about the size of your average dinner plate, and also that's the exact size a tarantula needs to be to make me shit myself. That is, funnily enough, that's what it takes.
I kind of feel that the bigger they are, the less scary they are.
Do you think?
Yeah, no, I think because the bigger they get, and because they're quite furry, the more they get into, like, pet size. Yeah,
maybe. This is so interesting, because I've got two people with completely the opposite views of tarantula.
You're saying that,
and Simon's going, I
guess if it's the size of a small dog, you just kid yourself that it is a small dog.
Yeah, exactly. That okay. You've just taped two of them.
Leash on it and take exactly. It out.
You've just taped two small dogs to each other. That's what it is. So.
The scariest thing, the thing that freaked me out about this is that this spider's fang size.
Yeah, that's what would get me actually.
1.5 inch. So again, doesn't sound big, but guys, grab that on a table.
It's like a 50p piece, maybe.
Yeah, maybe a little bit bigger than a 50p piece, which is
quite the fang.
Let's just say it's visible to the naked eye, very obviously. Yeah. If you saw that.
But do not put your naked eye near it.
Don't go. But yeah, I mean that issue. But they do come in all shapes and sizes. They are quite. Even though tarantulas are big species of spider, they're not all huge. They are, you know, some of them are only about 4 inches, you know, long, including their leg size as well. So, guys, have you ever seen a skeleton of a tarantula? Random question, but have you ever seen a skeleton of one?
It would be an exoskeleton.
Oh, nailed it again! Wow, well done. Yeah, it's a trick question. So everyone's basically seen a skeleton of a tarantula. The interesting thing about them, as a invertebrate as well, the skeleton of a tarantula, like all arachnids, are on the outside of the body, so hence the word exoskeleton. So in order to grow, the tarantula will kind of molt that off and form a new skeleton on top. Young do this several times a year, however, after maturity, usually once is more common than others. What I did learn is that some female species of tarantula, and I think it was a Goliath again, have got to the age of about 30. I did not know they could live that long.
Pretty amazing. I know. Yeah. I know when they molt, they're not just molting, you know, the exoskeleton and such, but some of their organs are going away with that.
Yeah, they replace a lot of vital things as well. Which
my goodness!
There was a few videos of online of like kind of speeding the process up of showing them how they do it. I've seen other species of with exoskeletons do it, so you see like locusts do it, kind of come out and stuff, and like crabs doing the same thing. Mm. But it is kind of eerie to watch.
How do they do their organs? Where does it come from? Their mouth. Their bum.
I think it's just all attached, I think. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I haven't got that information. I think there is a lot of things that are attached.
Imagine if you could just get a new liver. Wait, that is a thing, isn't it? We said to do that, don't we?
This podcast was recorded in 1867. But it is a weird thing to do, because then afterwards you're just left with this kind of shell of a tarantula, albeit not as big because it's not full. But it is quite eerie to look at. Yeah, it's... the next question... Beck, you mentioned this earlier. So, are tarantulas poisonous? Again, this is a bit of a trick question. Simon, do you know why?
They're venomous.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That is a lot. This was like a picky. This is like a pet thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is poison like the touch?
Yeah. Poison is touch. Venom is injected. So that was one thing when I was when I talked to people about tarantulas, because I was before I did this episode, I was like, I will talk to people and go like, hey, what do you think about tarantulas? Just trying. Understand what some of the misconceptions were, and they're like, well, they're all poisonous. It's like, but yeah, there's no such thing as a poisonous spider at all. They're only venomous. And
so you can eat them.
People do. People do. They are. They're eaten quite a lot in Vietnam and Thailand, deep fried.
See, I would be more happy holding a live tarantula than eating a dead one.
100%. So am I.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had to think for a second.
At least we can all agree on that, yeah.
I mean, vegan anyway, I wouldn't go near me too. So, but yeah. When I was in Thailand, I chose not to. I couldn't. Mm. It felt weird. Heads of fangs, all species have some sort of venom, because that's why the fangs are there, to inject something. But most of the times, it's just like a wasp sting. It's not gonna, unless you're allergic to that venom already, you're not going to really have that much of a bad reaction to it. But some species can cause like vomiting. That, like, you know, it's quite common for someone to get bitten and vomit, and also have spasms, and they can last over a couple of days. So it's not going to be like fatal in this day and age. It won't be certainly. So there are like other defence mechanisms for tarantulas as well. New World tarantulas. Do you guys know what the difference between New World and Old World when we talk about animals?
One has a top hat.
The other has a smartphone. Yeah, New World's defined by kind of Africa, Asia, that, Europe, that kind of area. No, I've got that wrong. No, that's Old World. Sorry, no, I just completely got that. Ignore what I just said. New World, sorry, is America and South America. Old World is Africa, Europe and Asia. So New World tarantulas, so the ones in the Amazon, Brazil, places like that, have a unique kind of defence mechanism about them, apart from a bite, apart from sticking their legs up in the air to scare
run prey. Across desks.
Run across. Interestingly, though, some hiss whilst running. Oh. Imagine that.
Yeah. I am, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Some have been known to kind of to either defend themselves against different birds of prey or sort of birds or any other animals that would eat them, to stick their legs up in the air, hiss, and run at them.
Mm.
Now that's quite. I mean, that would work for us if we were getting attacked. If I ran and hiss at someone, I'm sure it would do the same thing. But do you guys know what the other protective mechanisms they have?
Some of them fire out sort of little hair, poisonous hairs, I think.
Which is quite a cool kind of defence mechanism. Yeah. Is that it's on their back legs, so they'll literally turn around, stick their back, or they'll brush them off their abdomen, so they'll literally just kick them off, and all these hairs come out, and they're really irritable to the skin, but what they're aiming for really is to kind of get them in a predator's eyes. So if small mammals kind of sniff around at a tarantula, they'll just turn around and brush these little spurs off. And hopefully get them in the eye, which I thought was quite a cool little defence mechanism. Old World tarantulas have no urticating bristles at all. They're more likely to attack when disturbed. So the ones that you get in like Africa or Australia will just kind of bite as a first method of defence.
If you had a choice between venomous fangs for yourself, or you could shoot your beard off.
Definitely go with venom because I cannot grow a beard to save my life.
You've got stubble though.
It's stubble, yeah. Yeah, but like imagine
if you could shoot your stubble off and just, it like, caused irritation.
Just puff my face and just kind of go.
Or your leg hair. I'll join in with that. There we go.
I don't know. What would you choose?
I think I'm going a beard all day long.
I think so because a beard's more fashionable than fangs.
Oh, I know, fangs are, yeah, as soon as you said that, fangs are pretty cool.
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, well,
the Twilight generation. Twilight
era is gone, isn't it? Is it still there? Are people still vampires?
Yeah, what's cool now, fangs or beards? It's probably beards, isn't
it? Beards, yeah. I guess it depends where you are.
But then you shoot it off and you don't have a beard.
That's true, you have to get much closer with fangs as well. A beard, you could kind of just do it passing by.
Away. I guess in Shoreditch, beards would definitely win.
Everyone would be dead in Shoreditch.
You wouldn't go out your house. No. Okay, so next question to you guys. What does a Goliath bird eating spider eat?
Goliath birds.
It's in the name, mate. Ryan. Next question. Hit me 900, probably. any ideas?
I'm going to go that it's a trick question and it's rodents, perhaps. But maybe the odd bird if they got the chance.
Yeah, that was kind of the trick. Very rarely is it birds. Yeah. I mean, they've mainly got that name because a couple of times people have seen them eating young birds. Yeah. So they're opportunistic hunters, basically. Goliath bird eating spiders. They'll kind of go into trees, go into nests and take baby birds, which is where they actually get that name from. But I wanted to clear that up because everyone's like, bird eating spiders, they eat birds. It's like,
imagine a spider with a pigeon in its mouth. It's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, you say bird, there's a lot of species of, there's a sparrow and then there's a seagull. What we're talking about. But they very rarely eat birds. However, they do eat kind of a range of foods. They eat a lot of mealworms or earthworms, so that's quite like disappointing when you look at a bird. You're like, really, you're eating earthworms? I was expecting something a bit more exciting. Toads and frogs. Also been known to eat lizards and snakes as well, which I was quite surprised. From like a venom spaghetti. Point of view, I didn't think... I know, like, eat it. obviously, probably quite small non-venomous species of snake. Well, I guess it could be venomous. It doesn't matter, but I was quite surprised by that. My next question I was going to be talking about was, are you scared of tarantulas? But I think we've kind of discussed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a snake-eating tarantula sounds more scary than a bird-eating tarantula.
Depends if you're scared of snakes. I mean, if you were scared of both, that's true. The ultimate nightmare. But
That's true. Or are you like, well, now I only have to worry about one.
That's true. That's true.
Thanks, but now I've got that thing to deal with. But they're quite like, a lot of people are scared of them. Like we spoke about that at the beginning because they're kind of creepy looking, they're different. But they're really common in the pet trade. So a lot of people have some form of tarantula, whether it be a red knee or a chili rose tarantula, which they're quite timid as a tarantula species, so you can handle them quite easily, get them out, and they seem to be... Well, they're saying that when I was at college, we had a chili rose male who was the most aggressive animal in our exotics kind of section. So you wouldn't even open up the tank lid and it would be up like that, pincers out, and it would be like jumping at the side of the car. Oh. We didn't handle that one. moving on to a different animal now. Tillicum. Now, this is... I'm going to be careful with what I talk about when we talk about Tillicum. And also, we better start and talk about what Tillicum is, because I've had a tweet this morning saying, what the deuce is Tillicum?
Yeah, I didn't know either.
But you didn't know.
I thought maybe it was like a little woodland creature with big eyes, like Madagascar or something.
The more I think about it, the more... Yeah, it does sound like an animal. Which it is. It's a name of an animal. Tillicum, if you don't know, was... a individual orca that was at SeaWorld. And the reason why we're talking about this specific orca is because he was the largest orca in captivity. And he recently passed away on the 6th of January. He was 35 years old. So he was the largest one. He was captured in Iceland. This first bit isn't very pleasant about animals, by the way. It's a bit of a sad story. So sorry for the sad start. But he was captured in Iceland when he was 2 years old. And after that, he was transferred to Sealand in Pacific Columbia. And in 1992, he was then moved to SeaWorld. He weighed 12,500 pounds, which is huge. And he fathered 21 calves during his time in captivity, of whom 11 are still alive today. Now, there is a reason, like I said, we're going to be discussing him. I don't know, it's a difficult one to get this started, really. I'm going to try my best, though. So, SeaWorld announced that he passed away. It's not known yet the cause. He was being treated for a lung infection caused by bacterial pneumonia, which is the most common cause for death of whales and dolphins in captivity. And at this stage, you're probably like many. If there are people that know the story, you're probably still thinking, like, yeah, but why are we talking about him? Why is it him that's the interesting thing, not just whales as general? And that's because his story inspired a documentary called Blackfish, which was a look at SeaWorld's practices when it comes to marine animals, especially the orca. Also, Tillicum killed three people during his life: a trainer at the now closed Sealand, a man that was trespassing in SeaWorld Orlando, and a SeaWorld trainer in Orlando as well. So I guess the first question to you guys is have you seen Blackfish?
I have, yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, feel free to be... It's a pretty compelling film. Yeah. It raises a lot of issues, which I think needed to be questioned and asked. I think it comes from a certain angle,
yes.
Which I think there are always two sides to every story, and I think exactly. There are other aspects that perhaps weren't as covered as thoroughly as the more sensationalist bits of it.
Yeah.
But ultimately it raises the question about certain animals, marine mammals in captivity, and I think that was an important one.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely. Have you seen it?
I haven't. It is on Netflix, I noticed, and now I'm more inclined to watch it.
I would always recommend people to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm not, like you said, there are two sides to every story, and
just to make it clear to anyone listening as well, it is Blackfish and not Catfish.
And not Catfish, yeah.
Which is completely different.
Can you imagine someone watching Catfish now going, this is nothing to do
when
with
does the orca come in?
Oh my god, she's going to be an orca.
That's yeah. I mean, although the Catfish film is worth watching.
That is also, I will recommend the Catfish as well, but you won't learn anything about orcas on that. But it was interesting because I watched it and I did get upset when I watched it. Mm. And it has created change for the good, because SeaWorld announced last year that they would put an end to their breeding program of orcas. And whilst they will turn around and say that's not a direct result of Blackfish, I think it's from pressures that were brought onto them after that was released, because it kind of spread a message that no one had really questioned before.
Mm.
Going, wait, is this normal? This isn't kind of...
It's like when McDonald's miraculously started serving salads after... Yeah. Oh, it's nothing to do with Super Size Me. We were already planning on doing this.
But there was... after watching it, I was in two minds, and I don't know whether this is because I'd worked in a zoo background before, and worked in a variety of people from different expert areas in a zoo, and I kind of finished it. I was like, I got upset. I agree, but I'm not happy with how that was done, and that for me created a bit of a worry for people's ideas of captivity, because it's very easy. And there was an expert, an animal behaviour expert, that said during an interview afterwards, he said the film was pretty much made to make you feel, not to make you think. And that for me, as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. Because I had some of my own ideas, but whilst watching the film, completely lost them. They went to the back of my mind. I was just upset the entire time. So I thought, if people haven't looked into this previously before, you're not going to do research. You're just going to go, that is terrible. Mm-hmm. I hate captivity. And I thought that was a quite dangerous view.
Well, even if people are making what could be in the end a right decision, if they're making it for the wrong reasons, you've got to be kept. That's how we end up with politics in the state that is
at the moment. 100%. And because I kind of took from it that it was creating sea world trainers or animal trainers in general as these kind of evil characters. And I know, and I know yourself know, Simon, we know animal trainers and we know the benefit of animal training within captivity, not just from, you know, actually not from an entertainment's point of view at all. There's animal training that happens not on the public view, and that's, you know, for the benefit of the animal's life, from medical to enrichment, and, you know, it is important. So I thought that was a shame as well, because it didn't touch on any of that
in there,
which, like you said, two sides to every story. But at the end of the day, if you're looking at it from a piece of film, it's brilliant because it did exactly what the directors and the producers intended it to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you can't really argue it from that point of view. You go, well, from a film expertise, it's brilliant. There was one animal trainer that actually said when the film was completed, it was a 180-degree turn on what originally was presented to me, and she was interviewed in it. So she said, I had no idea. Before that, she fully agreed with the message. She was like, yeah, brilliant, let's get that out there. When it was presented, she was like, oh, hold the phone. That's not what I thought it was going to be. So it's quite a controversial thing. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I'd like to get your guys' kind of input on this, was a friend of mine that works in Sweden. She's an animal, works in animal behaviour. She's the head of animal behaviour at a zoo. And when I spoke to her about this, because I saw the outrage on Twitter, and I was like, oh, I've got to talk to someone, I've got to talk. I was like, what do you think about kind of Tilikum, about SeaWorld, about Blackfish? And she said something that I really agree with. She said, I think when it comes to looking at marine animal welfare, and this kind of goes to animal welfare as a whole, people need to start looking a lot closer to home.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. I think, you know, I think the issue with... you know, with Blackfish was it focused on one orca, you know, and you know, that wasn't a very sad tale of a wild caught creature that was kept in captivity. That doesn't really tell the bigger picture, you know, when it comes to conservation or, you know, anything like that. You know, there's much bigger issues with how we keep animals in general and our relationship with animals that are in the wild.
Yeah,
and I think that's not just marine mammals, that's everything really.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, you could rephrase that to, if you, you know, if you really have an issue with animal welfare, it needs to be a lot closer to home than just kind of what you're seeing in zoos and stuff like that. I mean, because I watch it, I don't agree with orcas in captivity. Like, that's my personal opinion. Other people may think differently, other people may agree. I don't agree with it because I have a kind of checklist with captivity, and it's got to be, they've got to hit three things. You got to be, well, for a zoo for me to be respectful, it's got to be educating, it's got to be conserving, and you've got to be kind of providing for that animal's natural needs as best as you can. Mm-hmm. If you're not doing one of those three things, you're not really living up to the top of what you can be.
Yeah.
How do you, Beck, if you don't mind me asking you, how do you kind of feel with, like, kind of orcas from a captive point of view? And dolphins, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
We're not just sticking this. I know Tilikum's kind of the heading of this as a story, but...
I don't know enough about it to strongly have an opinion, but I've always felt uncomfortable. In any type of animal in captivity, it's, as you say, it's about... how much of the animal's needs are being looked after, and you know, if it's the orca version of a dancing bear, then I don't like that. But if it's more of a sort of, you know, my problem is orcas are so big. Do they have enough space? Because I mean, we had elephants in Adelaide Zoo when I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a huge enclosure. And thankfully, they went, this is not right. Like, it was open. It was a fairly, you know, it wasn't big old bars and stuff, but it wasn't enough room for elephants.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And they sent them to Minato, which is a an open air. So it's more like a safari park.
Okay, cool.
And because South Australia is a drier state in Australia, it's actually not far off of like sort of that African plains type
that
feel.
Kind of, environment, yeah.
And so the elephants went there and they arrived. Unfortunately, one of them did a trip into a ditch and hurt itself, and then that became infected, and then we lost the elephant. Everyone was very upset.
Yeah.
But that wasn't. That's something that could have happened in
it
the
could
wild.
Happen,
yeah.
Could anyway, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not against the captivity as such, but the animal's welfare has to be number one before anything else. And if it's an education, if it's educating people as well, like if people are seeing them and going, "Wow, what a beautiful animal! Oh, it'd be so sad if these died." Oh, actually, you should think more about what tuna I buy. You know,
100%. That's exactly what that's what makes my blood boil. I think the most when I. Kind of when I see the some people behind their phones on Twitter going, you know, oh, SeaWorld this, SeaWorld that, and I'm like, God, it's not just SeaWorld, man.
Yeah,
like you've got now, I like I said, I agree with some aspects because SeaWorld release a lot of animals back into the wild. They take in a lot of animals. They don't release all of them, but they release a lot of them. But then I thought, why is that not well known? Like I would say that, and people are like, I've never heard that.
Mm.
Unless you go to a SeaWorld park. So I went on their Twitter feed this morning just to kind of have a look down and see what have they been talking about on their main Twitter feed. There was a tweet, and I'm going from the beginning, probably mid-December, so just mid-December, about releasing an animal back into the wild. It's like, when you're saying that SeaWorld cares and you're doing all this activity, you need to shout about it, right? Because especially in 2017 now with kind of, you know, all the crap we are hearing, we need to kind of counteract that and kind of go, no, this is the good. And if you want to, I guess, say clear your name from the bad press.
But it's also that bigger picture thing. And it is, you know, part of the thing with Tilikum was that we know that it was wild caught. And that's tragic, but that was in the 70s.
Yes.
And actually, at some point, you have to draw a line and go, well, Tilikum was never going to be released back into the wild, wouldn't have survived. And therefore, these days, I think there's only, you know, 50, 60 orcas in captivity.
Yeah.
But there are also declining numbers everywhere else in the world, in the wild. So if we're focusing on just 50 or 60 orcas, and that is sad and it's a shame and they probably shouldn't be in captivity, but that's not the story. You know, the story is that there are loads and loads all around the world that, you know, are declining.
Declining, absolutely. Because it's, if you look at it, I think the number, I'm going to try and get this right because I'm writing it down, 350,000 around marine mammals are killed every single year due to fishing or boat accidents and stuff.
Yep.
So it's like, guys, get that number, compare it to, like you said, maybe the 60 total. And I think with captivity, you've got to look at it as they're kind of working as an ambassador for their species.
Yep.
Like you said, the welfare's got to be the number one priority. But if 100 kids run up to an enclosure and go, I love that animal, and you know, 20% of those kids go away and go, I want to learn more about them. And those 20 kids then go on to, you know, improve their way of life to help animals in the wild. Why is that? As long as the welfare side is being kept, it's kind of, unfortunately, that there's so many distractions in this world that we need to have something like that to go, guys, wake up, come and have a look at this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can't just talk about orcas anymore. You've got to have one. And
yep.
It was interesting what you said about, like, going back into the 70s, that's when Tilikum was caught, because people's, I don't want to say ignorance because it's not. I'm the same. I'm ignorant on a lot of these topics. But if you look at, you know, gorilla species, gorillas in that time of the year were taken from the wild. Fish, different fish species that people have at pets.
Yeah.
They're taken from the wild still. A lot of the tropical animals still today. People go on reefs and collect to sell on the pet trade. And look at the tranches we just spoke about. It's, you have to look at the bigger picture and bring it a lot closer to home.
Yeah.
But you said about tuna, which is an excellent point because that's. Eating fish, that's one thing I will say to people. If someone says to me, oh, I don't like orcas being kept in captivity, my first reaction would be like, okay, do you eat fish? And if the answer is yes, you go, you need to look at that before you look at orcas in captivity.
Yeah.
Because it's, you've got to look and weigh up the damage.
Well, I think we like our way of, most of us like our way of life and we don't want to live any differently.
Yes.
So it's much easier to get angry on Twitter than it is to actively change part of your lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly.
And start looking into diet and where things come from and stuff. Like, I really struggle with it. Really, a lot. I really struggle. Every now and then I'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, I should check that. Or, like, I'll choose this product over that product. But, oh, goodness me. It's not easy.
But it's not easy. Like I said, because there's so many distractions as well. There's so many distractions. And it's, you know, if you're running back late from somewhere and you're like, I need to eat for my health. I don't have time to read the back of a packet. That's fair enough, especially when you're living in a city. You know, London or even Bath and stuff like that. There's so much going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the point I made earlier about responsible tourism, that's another really big issue, particularly for orcas and dolphins.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, is that people, you know, the boats that are taking you out to see marine mammals in the wild are actually, you know, what's powering them? You know, that is polluting the sea around. And, you know, orcas, I think more than a lot of marine mammals, they've proven have got a high level of toxins in their blubber, and in, you know, that they are dying because we are polluting the oceans.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I learned was the noise, just the actual noise of boats and stuff like that. Like a lot of kind of marine mammals, they kind of communicate through that, through sound and noises to each other, and the sonar and stuff. So it's any distractions from that can completely throw off a group. You know, and split up a group, and like throw them off course. And stuff like that. So like you said, it's that responsible tourism, responsible kind of looking into what you're eating or the products you're buying from what's in it. But saying that, I'm not going to turn around and go, so yeah, keep going to SeaWorld, keep doing that. Yeah. Because I personally do agree. I don't agree with orcas being kept in captivity. I do think it's a good thing that it's changed. But yeah, give Blackfish a watch. Just maybe do a bit more research afterwards as well.
Just be wary.
Be wary. Take it with a pinch of salt as well. Like, I think a lot of people I know forgot that watching a 90-minute documentary does not give you a certificate in orca behaviour. It does not do that at all. Cool. So I don't mean to end on that kind of depressing note about whales and stuff like that. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to touch on because it was kind of a timely event. It only just happened last week. But that kind of brings us to the end of this episode. So thank you for both of you for joining me today. I hope you've kind of enjoyed talking about different animals.
It's been a pleasure.
So there you go, that was episode 1 of Into the Wild, the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. And thank you again to my two guests, Beck and Simon, who are fantastic and great fun to have on the episode. There's a few more people I would like to thank as well. Thank you to Matt Hoss, a fellow comic and friend who's taken numerous phone calls from myself in the last few months with me shouting down the phone, how does this software work? Because I'm a bit of a technophobe and I have no idea. Also, thank you to Ryan Stevens for creating the logo for Into the Wild. And also thank you to Layla Woozier, who's provided the music that you've heard at the beginning and the end of this episode as well. And finally, thank you to all of you guys for tuning in, downloading, supporting me and this little project that I've got going. There'll be more episodes coming up in the next few weeks with brand new guests and talking about completely different animals. So tune in, share with the world. Thank you very much and have a lovely rest of your week. Thank you.